Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Monday, January 22nd, 2024. Let the record reflect the time is 3:15 p.m. Today we have present Representative Prox, Representative Wright, Representative Carrick, Representative Fields, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff will be assisting us today are Cheryl Cole with House Records, David Monroe with the LIO, and Clark Bickford, my staff and committee aide to House Labor and Commerce. On today's agenda, we have three bills. We are going to start with HB 143, Advanced Recycling and Facilities, a bill we worked on in this committee last session. After that, we'll hear HB 115, Naturopaths, and lastly, we'll hear HB 192, Delivery and Pickup of Alcohol. Starting with HB 143 from Representative McKay's office, Representative McKay and his Chief of Staff, Trevor Jepson, are here to give us a refresher on what we did last session, as well as provide any new or additional info to members of the committee. Please put your name on the record and begin.
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative Tom McKay. Thank you, Chair Sumner, and the rest of the House Labor and Commerce Committee for being here today for this refresher presentation on HB 143, a bill that puts into statute a regulatory framework which will allow the fledgling industry of advanced recycling to come to Alaska. You'll see some of the same slides as last year, but this is going to be a very short presentation to respect the time of the committee. Oh, let me go here in the full.
Make it big.
Yeah. Advanced recycling, also referred to as chemical recycling, is a relatively new technology that can convert post-use plastics that are currently unable to be recycled mechanically and to hydrocarbon-based products. As of today, 24 other states have passed similar legislation to HB 143, leading to regulatory stability and the result being billions of dollars flowing into the domestic advanced recycling industry. If you have the sponsor statement in front of you, you'll notice that that says 23 other states. After a session late last spring, Utah became the 24th state, so that's the discrepancy between the sponsor statement. Using this technology, we can convert discarded plastic into valuable products such as building blocks for new chemicals, feedstocks for new plastics, additives, waxes, lubricants, and fuels. The majority of the product created through advanced recycling today is naphtha, which is a precursor for ethylene, and propylene, which are the raw materials for plastics. It's important to note that this industry is not dependent on government subsidies, and this technology is meant to complement, not replace, mechanical or traditional recycling. Next, we'll go into the processes that the advanced recycling facilities use, which are also defined as terms in this bill. These processes are gasification, pyrolysis, and solvolysis. All three of these processes are non-combustive, so you shouldn't be thinking of an advanced recycling facility as you would an incinerator facility for trash. You should think of it more as a manufacturing facility. While there are, of course, emissions associated with the advanced recycling process, they can be regulated and controlled through technological and operational practices just like any other type of manufacturing plant. Here we have a potential estimated economic benefit associated with an advanced recycling facility in our states, which was conducted by the American Chemistry Council. For this economic model, they assumed one advanced recycling facility in the state and roughly 60,000 metric tons of trash available, of landfill plastic available, with 50% of that being available for advanced recycling. The 60,000 metric tons of landfill plastic was estimate was based on Alaska's population share of total U.S. population from the 2020 census, with the weighing factor applied to account for the estimated recycling rate of the state. In this model, we see a direct effect in employment of 100 jobs, a payroll of $10.4 million, and an economic output of $34.2 million. In addition to the direct impacts, we see downstream employment, both indirect and induced, of another 150 jobs. Similarly, we see additional payroll of $10.5 million and additional output of $36 million. Is there any questions on economic model?
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair to Mr. Ed. I'm sorry, no, to Trevor, pardon me. I wanted to ask you a question about the estimation of the state's generation. You said that was based on the national amount of recycled materials divided by our population. So that does that presume that Alaska has the same level of manufacturing and recycling as the rest of the country? I'm concerned it might be overstating the amount of material that might be produced in Alaska.
Yeah, so they use, Representative Sadler through the chair, they used a weighing factor to account for the amount of recycling that Alaska does compared to other states. And I believe we have Craig Cookson on the line with the American Chemistry Council. They conducted the model.
We do have Craig Cookson on the line. Mr. Cookson, if you might opine on that. Go ahead, put your name on the record, please.
Yeah, this is Craig Cookson. I'm the Senior Director of Plastic Sustainability, the American Chemistry Council.
Representative Sadler through the
chair. Can
you hear me? Oh. Yeah, I restate the question.
Go ahead and restate your question there, yeah. Representative Sadler. Hey, thank you.
Through the chair, Mr. Cookson, just curious about the modeling that predicts the amount of recycled material Alaska. You know, we have a lot of great people here, but we don't have much manufacturing, so when I heard that the predicted amount of recycled material was based on just Alaska's population divided by the national level amount of recycled material, just gave me some concerns that might be overstating what we might actually produce. If you could explain how the model allows and accounts for Alaska's somewhat unique situation, I'd sure appreciate it.
Yeah, through the chair, it's not based necessarily on the manufacturing, but on the waste generation essentially per capita. So, you know, in Alaska, I'm sure folks are still, drinking milk and eating snack mix and using jerky and, beef jerky and other types of snacks and generating plastic tubes, whether it's, toothpaste or hand cream, as well as shipping goods and wrapped in plastic, that arrive at grocery stores wrapped in plastic wrap. So it's really based on the generation of plastics in the economy, not necessarily a direct manufacturing of it.
I appreciate the clarification. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Fields.
Thank you.
Thank you, through the chair. If I could ask the testifier, perhaps the bill sponsor, to follow up on that. So if this is plastic waste stream, is this bill particularly helpful for some of the higher number of plastics that my understanding are probably not being recycled or maybe being thrown away right now? How does it alter the market for the ones and the twos that I think we recycle today? Thank you.
Representative Fields, through the chair, the ones and twos, you are correct, are the traditional mechanical recycled plastics. And I believe it's 3 to 7 that is currently able to be done with advanced recycling. I'll let Mr. Cookson correct me if I'm wrong there.
Yeah, Representative Fields, through the chair, Trevor's correct in that this technology essentially complements mechanical recycling. So Alaska, like the lower 48, does a great job in recycling your PET soda and water bottles and your milk jugs and detergent bottles. It's really everything else. When you think of all the pouches and the tubes and the film plastics, think of all the film that's wrapped around toilet paper and paper towels. All over the country, not much of that plastic is being effectively recycled, and that's what advanced recycling will enable us to do.
Thanks, and again, for the testifier, bill sponsor. Anchorage, where I live, has a single waste stream for recycling, mix all the plastics together. Are there states where it is a meaningful rate of recycling, your 3, 3, or 7s, and is it, as an Anchorage, a solid waste stream, or does it require pre-sorting by consumers?
Representative Fields, through the chair, the current economic model for advanced recycling and why you'll see in the bill that the plastic input isn't defined as solid waste is because there is a sorting and cleaning and packaging process as it's en route to the advanced recycling facility.
And if I could ask the follow-up of the testifier. So the bill gives DEC some direction to identify air and water regulations that are different from existing regulations for the mechanically separated recycling. I'm hoping that the Chemistry Council could explain why you want a different regulatory structure than the one that currently covers the mechanically separated recycling. Thank you.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Fields. Currently, you know, our waste and recycling laws do an effective job of regulating the nature of activities that happen at a facility that either, you know, is disposing of commingled materials or does separation of commingled materials into homogeneous commodity streams. However, that is totally different regulation than what an advanced recycling facility does, which is essentially a small-scale chemical manufacturing plant, in that it takes plastics that, again, are coming in as a homogeneous raw material. It takes those, it heats them in the absence of oxygen, heats them until they melt, and then heats them until they turn to gas vapors, and then cools and condenses them down to a liquid feedstock that's like a kind of an oil equivalent. And then that feedstock is what is used as a raw material in the production of new plastics and chemicals again. So the, you know, to best protect Alaskans, you know, health, as well as the environment, you know, manufacturing, you know, regulations are the best fit here. Because, you know, again, the activities are much different than what happens at a, you know, a solid waste, facility or a transfer station or a materials recovery facility.
Thank you. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Thank you for the presentation thus far. I think my only question on the economic benefits are assuming that the product that Mr. Cookson just described would need to be exported, or is there a place inside of Alaska currently that would utilize the liquid that is produced through advanced recycling to do we have a plastic manufacturer here, or would this be an export product?
Representative Ruffridge, through the chair, this would be an export product. To my knowledge, there are no plastic making facilities that would be able to use the naphtha to make plastic.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, why don't you carry on?
Thank you, Chair. So to wrap it up, advanced recycling is a low greenhouse gas process that can be used to produce petroleum-based products from discarded plastic. This technology greatly increases the percentage of plastics that can be recycled, decreases landfill space taken up by plastic, and will provide economic benefits to Alaskans if we can attract the industry to our state. However, the precursor to those benefits is passing HB 143, to provide regulatory stability for companies potentially looking to invest in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will go ahead and move on to public testimony for HB 143, setting a time limit at 2 minutes per testifier. Please email your testimony to the committee as well. So we will open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? No. And I see no one online, so we will close public testimony. Vice Chair Ruffridge, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I would move House Bill number 143, also referred to as 33-LS0427, /R, be advanced from committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Okay, without objection, House Bill 143 has been reported from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee report.
And so this bill currently would ask for an advisory board to be managed within the department. And I would make the argument that a full-fledged board would better suit the ability of naturopaths to function in or online with other medical providers within the state. So this amendment simply removes the word advisory and establishes or would propose to establish a full functioning board for naturopaths for the state of Alaska.
And I might note we do have Director of Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, Sylvan Robb, available today to answer questions, provide clarity on the subject of advisory boards versus regulatory boards in relation to HB 115. Representative Carrick.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'll just ask the same question on the record that I asked Representative Ruffridge before the meeting, which is, you know, first of all, there's a question for Sylvan if she would be willing to enumerate some of the differences between an advisory and a full board, but I think Vice Chair Ruffridge knows the answer to the question up front, which is, are there any professional boards in Alaska that are of this type that are advisory right now? In other words, can you restate, you know, where this board would fall with this amendment in relation to other boards of this type?
Representative Ruffridge?
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Certainly would appreciate Director Robb's input on this as well, but I think advisory boards are certainly something that's within her capacity to manage. But as far as a medical provider status relationship, there is no advisory board that I'm aware of that allows full prescriptive authority.
And Director Robb, if you would like to put your name on the record and perhaps answer some of these questions, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. I believe Representative Carrick's question, through the chair, Representative Carrick, we do not currently have any advisory boards at the moment within the division.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Okay, follow-up, Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the chair. And can you just please enumerate as well some of the differences for the listening public between an advisory board and a full board in terms of authority that is granted?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Carrick. So currently the division has 21 regulatory boards, and those boards are invested with the powers that are given to them in statute. For the majority of those boards, that includes things like approving licenses, setting the requirements to obtain a license or renew a license, laying out the requirements for continuing education, weighing in on disciplinary matters. Whereas an advisory board, certainly there's a number of different ways that an advisory board could be structured, but it is less of a policy-making body and more, as the name suggests, to provide advice and insight from the profession in question.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ms. Sylvan Robb. Yeah, I'm not seeing it. We're just changing the name, but none of the functions really make any change. On page 2, line 19, it just says the board shall meet and provide recommendations to the commissioner. I'm not quite sure what effect changing the name from Naturopath Advisory Board to Naturopath Board really accomplishes. I remain to be persuaded there's any difference at all, frankly.
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, it may be a better question for the maker of the amendment.
Sure. Through the chair to the...
We have Representative Wright, then Representative Prox, then Representative Fields, and we'll take it in that order. Representative Wright? Oh, no. Pass. Representative Prox?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, does the department have any opinion, recommendation on the advisability of a... advisability of a board as opposed to an advisory board? Noting the number of naturopaths currently and et cetera. Is this something that the department can the department take on just the function of the regulatory power of the board, for instance?
Through the chair to Representative Prox, certainly there are 21 different programs covering 80-some professions. Where the division, there is no board, and the division provides that regulatory oversight for those professions. So this would be similar to that, but sort of in an enhanced situation, because there would be this formal advisory board that would exist to provide insight into the profession. The advisory board versus the regulatory board really gives, splits the difference nicely. One of the concerns that exists is with a very small profession like this. In fiscal year 23, there were just 56 licensed naturopaths in the state. Is that, you know, and a board comes with additional expenses, and so those expenses would be borne by those 56 individuals. Additionally, we have one other profession that is similar in size to the number of naturopaths we have, and it's challenging for that regulatory board in part just because, you know, while Alaska is a big geographic state, we all know Alaska is a small town. And so everyone knows each other. And so we actually had one disciplinary case for that other board where every single member of the board was conflicted out because they all knew each other or had been mentors or been in business together. And so with a very, very small group, it can lead to conflicts of interest much more so than you see for larger professions.
I'll follow up. If the board is with the conflicts of interest certainly or something, but if the board cannot get a quorum, then how often do decisions get delayed because of lack of quorum of a board?
Through the chair to Representative Prox, certainly if a board has those powers, of course it requires that there be a quorum in order for it to conduct business. And so for some boards where we have struggled to achieve a quorum, then business is delayed. And depending on, you know, if there are licensing cases or investigations, disciplinary matters, those are similarly delayed until we can achieve a quorum and have a meeting.
And follow up through the chair. How often does that happen? And would it be as a matter of weeks or months that the delay might occur because the board has to wait to meet?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, the frequency really depends on the composition of the board. Those members change over time, so it's an issue that different boards have struggled with at various times, and it's. The delay, again, depends on the responsiveness of the board members and how quickly the meeting can be rescheduled. But because the boards are subject to the Open Meetings Act, you know, you can't reschedule for the next day just because we do need to be transparent and ensure that the public is able to be aware of and attend those meetings if they're interested in doing so.
Okay. And then final, the department, your department is accountable to the governor, an elected official, and to the legislature, a group of elected officials, correct?
Through the chair to Representative Prox, yes.
Okay, whereas boards are less accountable. Thank you.
Representative Fields?
I don't have a question, actually. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ruppridge, did you have?
Well, I can just wrap up if that's okay with you, or answer. Go ahead.
You're recognized if you want.
Yes, thank you. So I think one of the important factors to bring forward here, and maybe a question to Director Robb, is whether or not there are any professions with prescriptive authority in the state that do not have a regulatory board.
Through the chair to Representative Ruffridge, no.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair to the maker of the amendment, I'm still not clear as to whether changing the name from advisory board to board imparts any regulatory authority. If you can explain to me what the effective change or effect is of this amendment, I'll consider it. But right now it just seems like window dressing, unless there's something I'm missing.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think there's a big difference between an advisory board and a naturopathy board. That being said, I think moving forward, depending on the wishes of this committee, there could be some cleanup language, as you mentioned in Section B, regarding the commissioner having oversight. Typically, a board would have an appointment based off of the wishes of the governor rather than the commissioner. But I think this discussion is more along the lines of, shall this be an advisory board or board?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
If I could ask a question to the chair of Ms. Silver-Rubb, is there some definition of a board versus advisory board that I'm not seeing, or what is the practical effect in your view of changing the name by eliminating the word advisory? I'm looking at the language of the section two, and I don't see that it really changes the function of that board at all, unless there's a reference that I'm missing.
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, I'm not an attorney, but I think without giving the board powers, the board would remain mostly advisory and in effect.
So to paraphrase, if I may, there is no real effect of this amendment on the functioning or authority of the board. Is that correct?
Representative Prox is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I suppose literally, no. But if somebody starts thinking about this a few years down the road, the intent of the legislature might come into being. And I think it's best to, I guess this is my personal prejudice against boards that have the authority to make it more difficult for somebody to get into the profession. That's my real concern. And I would rather, I don't mind seeing a board advising an official that works for the government, that works for ultimately elected officials. It's our authority, and maybe we give that authority to the governor, but I just don't like the idea of giving it to a board that always, to some degree or another, has a conflict of interest with other people that might be wanting to get in. That's my objection to it.
Then Representative Ruffridge, did you?
I actually do have a question.
Oh, okay. Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess I would look to the amendment maker. It seems like if we're making it a board with real power, that the intent there would be pretty clear. So I understand what Representative Sadler is saying, but I think the intent would be clear. And if it is a board that is paying fees to support the board work, then implicitly, wouldn't more of the cost be borne as a user fee versus general fund? Is that not the amendment maker's intent? Thank you.
Representative Ruffridge.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair to Representative Fields, by way of that to Representative Sadler. So the intent of the amendment obviously is to have the discussion about making this a full regulatory board. With the powers that would be similar to all other medical professions in the state that have prescriptive authority. That being said, to move that forward, based off of some of the questions of Representative Sadler, certainly we could add to this amendment, should there be a desire to do so, a removal of this language in Section B, which would certainly clarify that, and then in Section C, changing the language from serving at the pleasure of the commissioner to serving at the pleasure of the governor. But I think this would be an appropriate place to have that conversation. I wanted to start it with having the discussion of what is an advisory board versus what is an actual full-fledged regulatory board. I hope that answers your question.
Mr. Chairman. It does. I guess I would just state the bill significantly expands the scope of naturopathy to substantially overlap with doctors and pharmacists, actually. So it seems to me that if we're creating essentially a much more expansive, almost new profession, it would be kind of strange to have regulatory authority over two professions, doctors and pharmacists, but not over naturopaths who do in some cases the same procedures. That would just seem to me a little unusual. So for that reason, I will be supporting the amendment. Thank you.
Could we just take a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner, and I apologize for the delay. Thank you. I would like to make a conceptual amendment to amendment number one. Thank you to Representative Sadler for bringing forward a couple of items here. So that would be adding on page 2, line 18 through 20, deleting all language and inserting the following. The board may adopt regulations necessary to carry into effect the provisions of this chapter.
And then in addition to that, would on page 2, line 23, delete the word commissioner and insert governor. The intent of that would be to form a naturopathy board as a regulatory board instead of an advisory board.
Representative, to also make any conforming changes?
Yes, and certainly would be open to Ledge Legal making any sort of conforming changes as needed.
Okay, without objection. Representative Prox.
Yes, I really don't think this is a good idea for doing this in 5 minutes in a committee hearing. As a matter of process, if we want to make these changes, or if somebody wants to, then it, if nothing else, it could be considered in the Rules Committee because it still has to go through the Rules Committee. But giving a specific group, which these boards end up being, that is outside of the what should be the normal process of governing. It should be the elected officials or somebody under the authority of the elected officials should be making the rules. Now, maybe we want to get a group of citizens to advise the director or the commissioner or whatever, but it should be the commissioner or the director who has the or should have the legal authority to do this. In my opinion, it's been a long established bad practice, and we should move away from that. And also, I would note that the governor has sent us several executive orders to get rid of boards. And I think that's a really good idea. The boards are just slowing down the opening of Alaska for business, and they generally degenerate into protecting their own territory. And that is not and they all have a conflict of interest. They have their own interest first. They're human beings. And that is not necessarily the public's interest. And it just slows down the process. It slows down the market, which is where decisions should be made. I take the responsibility if I want to go to a factory certified mechanic or some other certified mechanic or no certified mechanic. And the same can apply. And in the case of medical care, that's what I do. I make the decision. I don't need to depend on somebody else to make the decision of who I can go to be served. And we should stick to that, and we should stick to the advisory, limit this to an advisory function rather than giving them regulatory authority. I feel fairly strongly about that.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
I will speak to my colleague's objection. My reading of the statutes is that other boards that are regulatory boards, I understand the intent is to try and create the naturopathy board as a regulatory board. Other regulatory boards have clearly defined powers and duties, and this rather expansive bill purports to expand the scope of practice for naturopaths. I would feel more comfortable knowing that there were some sideboards in what the particular duties and responsibilities and powers were of this board than simply giving them the power to adopt regulations to do things. So that's the source of my discomfort with this. If I actually think maybe having a regulatory board is a good thing, but I'm just not confident that the language we have in front of us now is the proper vehicle for doing so.
Okay, there is objection. Please call the roll on conceptual amendment 1 to amendment number 1.
Representative Prox.
No.
Representative Drupke.
Yes.
Representative Sadler.
No.
Representative Wright.
Yes.
Representative Carrick.
Yes.
Representative Fields.
Yes.
Chair Sumner.
Yes. Okay, so with 5 yeas and 2 nays, conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 1 has passed. Amendment number one is before us. There is objection. Please call the roll on amendment number one as amended.
Chair, Representative Kerr.
Yes.
Representative Fields.
Yes.
Representative Pratt.
No.
Representative Ruffridge.
Yes.
Representative Sadler.
No.
Representative Wright.
Yes.
Chair Sumner.
Yes. And so, by a vote of five yeas and two nays, amendment number one as amended has passed. We are going to open public testimony on House Bill 115. We're going to set a time limit of 2 minutes per testifier. Please email the committee with your testimony as well. So I will open public testimony. Starting in the room, is anyone in the room wanting to testify on House Bill 115? No? Okay, we will go online. I have in order of, I have in the Fairbanks LIO, Bruce Campbell. Mr. Campbell, if you can hear me, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Sumner. My name is Bruce Campbell, P.O. Box 82245, Fairbanks, Alaska, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 115. I value naturopathic care and believe 115 is an important update allowing NDs to practice at their level of training. I recently underwent surgery by a fantastic surgeon, but prior to the resurgery, I received a whole bunch of training and lists of supplements and things that would help healing through the surgery process. And so it came with a long list of vitamins and supplements, and some to be taken before surgery, some not to be taken before surgery, and others to be taken after surgery. It's a long list. But what was interesting is that the instructions encouraged discussion with a family provider as long as the provider had training in supplements or nutraceuticals, they called them, such as a naturopathic doctor. And I thought that reference explained the role of a naturopathic doctor as being just slightly different than a standard family MD, but it is more detailed perhaps than what they were listing as these nutraceuticals. Anyway, I found HB 115 a valuable update to the statutes, and I encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next in the Homer LIO, we have Wayne Adderhold. Mr. Adderhold, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thanks. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Wayne Adderhold, representing myself as a patient consumer, I'm speaking in support of HB 115. I've utilized services that MDs provide in a collaborative approach with other licensed medical providers, MDs, chiropractors, acupuncturists, physical therapists since 1993. I've also served a term as a public member on the Professional Medical Regulatory Board here in Alaska. That was the chiropractic board. And I can say that the concerns about the board limiting membership in the profession is not well-founded. The staff of the department reviews all applications first for any glitches and then passes it to the board. So that's the basic gatekeeper, and the board would have to have cause for turning somebody down. As a strong advocate of patient-centered care, I also believe it is my job as a responsible patient to be an educated consumer. State has a duty under Article 7, Section 4 of the Constitution to both promote and protect public health. Scope of practice determination should rest with each profession's own board in concert with state DCCD personnel. An extreme libertarian view would say the state should keep hands-off approach and stay completely out of regulation professions. I disagree. I believe there's a proper role for both government and the market in this issue. HB 115 appears to strike a proper balance, and I believe its passing is long overdue. Downside for the state in failing to advance ND regulation to an appropriate level is a continued loss of revenue to states that maintain an optimal medical regulatory climate, like Arizona, where I spent well over $20,000 in 2002 for cutting-edge cancer treatment by an ND-managed clinic. I've been personally involved in support for advancing our state's regulation of the ND profession since 2004. Despite claims to be something other than turf, all the opposition I've heard amounts to thinly veiled restraint of trade through a third party, the legislature. Another term for this is called regulatory capture, and any observer would see a clear case of this act in the history of ND legislative action in Alaska. It's time to correct the past and move forward in the public's interest. Please pass HB 115 out of committee and into law without delay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adderhold. Next, we have Mary Ann Foland. Please put
yes.
on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, I'm Mary Ann Foland. I'm a family practice physician in Anchorage, and I've been taking care of Alaskans for over 40 years. And I would like to speak out in opposition to this expansion of scope of practice. I know that the Alaska State Medical Association, the Alaska Academy of Family Physicians, the American Academy of Family Physicians, and the AMA all oppose expansion, but there's never been an intent to restrict collaborative use or restrict current professional activities. It's really not about competition. There's only 56 naturopaths, as we heard earlier today. It's about patient safety. And parallel education just isn't the same as equivalent education. So an apprenticeship isn't the same as a postgraduate residency. So the training doesn't have the depth and breadth of allopathic medical education. Please look up the definition of naturopathy. When I do, I can't find anything that includes surgery or prescription drugs. Other states that have approved naturopath expansion have found them using mifepristone for in-office abortions, vasectomies, cosmetic Botox, liposuction, and gluteoplasty, which is a Brazilian butt lift. I had to look that one up. I have three examples that reflect training and judgment. And there was an insulin-dependent teenager who was taken off her insulin and told that she should be able to control her condition with diet and supplements, and she ended up in ICU with a diabetic coma. She did survive. Another lady was expelling tissue that tested positive for endometrial cancer. That's a really late-stage symptom. And she was excited, though, because it meant that the treatment her naturopath was giving her was helping her expel the cancer cells. That I find scary. Another patient was diagnosed with formaldehyde sensitivity by a board-certified immunology allergist in town and told that it's not an IgE-mediated thing, so you can't desensitize, you just have to avoid. Well, this patient went to the naturopath and was injected with formaldehyde to desensitize. That was a nine-year-old little girl. Please protect our fellow Alaskans. And this is a Pandora's box with nebulous limits and irreversible impact on patient safety. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Annette O'Connell. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Annette O'Connell. Do you need my address?
I do not.
Okay, sir. I am calling to support, promote, and beg you to give naturopaths the use of their training. They have been trained in the use of these prescriptive drugs and should be allowed to do so. I don't think that Oregon is dumber than Alaska, and they have the naturopaths with these abilities. I just heard the MD talking about these people that she stated that they had such a bad time. But I would like you to remember one thing, is the opioid epidemic was brought about by these well-trained MDs. Now, I was in 1950, I was a failure to thrive baby, and I was diagnosed with celiac, and all through my life I had problems. MDs said I had cysts, they said I had leukemia, they said I had chest blockage, they said I had lupus, and finally I went to a naturopathic physician who told me I had severe celiac disease, and that I needed to change my food and everything about my eating. Then in 2022, I had debilitating pain, went to an MD, I had a Lyme test before this, did not even recognize the Lyme test as being relevant, ordered a chest x-ray, rheumatologist, nothing was found, and I was cut loose with, good luck. And again, I went to the naturopath who, and I had to go to Vermont, could not go to anybody in Alaska because they could not do the prescriptions. And I had to go to Vermont to a naturopath to get what I needed. This is not right, you guys. My husband was an optometrist who went through this same thing. It's almost like if you could just put in the name optometry, it would be the same talk. And now they have the rights, and guess what? Nobody's died. It just is so frustrating. It's just so frustrating. So anyway, I'm hoping that you pass this. We can get naturopaths where they should and deserve to be in this state. I thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Next, we have Carrie Baldwin-Sayer. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Dr. Carrie Baldwin-Sayer. I actually was here as a resource to answer questions. I have testified previously. I can repeat that testimony, but I am assuming the best use of our time is if I'm just here to answer questions as needed in regard to the naturopathic physician education as I work for the National University of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon.
Thank you, and we do have your testimony on the record. Next, we have Pam Ventgen. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Sumner and committee members. My name is Pam Benson. I'm the executive director of the Alaska State Medical Association. We oppose the expansion of the naturopath scope of practice in HB 115 to include minor office procedures and prescriptive authority. While naturopaths and physicians each have 4 years of graduate level medical education or education, physicians cannot get a license in any state in the country until they have a minimum of 2 to 3 years of residency training. Some residencies are up to 7 years of specialized training. Naturopath training includes 850 to 1,200 hours of patient care, where physician training includes 12,000 to 16,000 hours of direct patient care. By allowing naturopaths to perform procedures and prescribe medicine that an MD cannot do without additional training makes no sense at all. It is also important to note that there are very few limitations in this bill on what constitutes minor office procedures. Naturopaths in other states do IUD insertions, they do surgical abortions, vasectomies, and liposuctions, and prescriptive authority could include medication abortions. Where is the safety factor that would provide for patient safety with these potential procedures and prescriptions? Please oppose House Bill 115. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Lisa Martsall. Sorry if I mispronounced that. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lisa Martsall. I'm calling from Fairbanks, and I'm calling in support of HB 115. Our naturopath here in Fairbanks has been our primary care physician for almost 25 years. We are highly confident with this model and standard of care. We truly appreciate and trust the wealth of information and therapeutic approaches our doctor provides. It enables us to be more proactive in our treatment, offers us natural therapies and alternatives to more invasive models of care. Occasionally, however, additional interventions such as prescription drugs or in-office procedures are necessary. For us, this has created additional expense as we now must schedule with another physician who is not our primary care doctor, doesn't know us, doesn't know our full medical history. It does create hardship and a disconnect, which we've recently experienced, actually. Passing this bill is long overdue here in the state of Alaska, and I just applaud Representative Mike Prax for introducing this bill. I thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Christine Sagan. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Christine Sagan. I've lived in Alaska since 1986. I'm in private practice. I'm on 17 years as a family nurse practitioner. I started work, and I always had a naturopathic colleague, and they were some of the best mentors I had. I now own a practice, a family practice that serves over 5,500 clients, and I find that naturopaths are extremely competent and loving and kind and a great primary care providers for our patients. And we have almost no complaints. And what I find is that there's different personalities and different types of medicine for different people. And I find that people who want naturopathic care typically aren't getting what they need from other, you know, personalities, et cetera. And as with any profession, there's going to be good and bad. There's going to be mistakes. There's going to be, like, the bad stories. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's a licensure. It could be that person specifically. I know they tried to go after nurse practitioners for a long time, and this data has come out that we have the same or better outcomes as MDs. So I think in terms of having access to care, I think it's really important to allow full licensure. And no ND who doesn't have training in, let's say, vasectomies is going to go off and do a vasectomy. So I don't think that patient safety thing. I think the hardest part right now is we don't have enough of anything in Alaska, including family practice or primary care. And in general, the people coming there don't want prescriptions. But if the person comes in and has a clear ear infection, they should be able to prescribe an antibiotic. And so I just think it would be allow more access, and I don't think it's getting in the way of anything but just providing access. And if there is issues, that's what boards are for, to oversee things. So I'm in support of HB 115. Thanks.
Thank you. That is all I see online. Coming back to the room, is there anybody that wishes to testify on House Bill 115? No? With that, I will close public testimony. Vice Chair Ruffridge, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Chair Sumner. I would move House Bill number 115, version alpha, also referred to as 33-LS0631-A, the advance from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, and authorize Ledge Legal to make any conforming changes as necessary.
Okay, without objection, House Bill 115 shall be reported from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. Pickup of alcohol. This bill was sponsored by House Labor and Commerce Committee, and I'm going to ask my staff, Serena Hackenmiller, to please approach the committee and begin the overview of HB 192's sponsor statement and sectional analysis. Go ahead and put your name on the record, Mrs. Hackenmiller. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Serena Hackenmiller. I'm a staff. I'm staff for Chair Sumner. Today, I'll be introducing HB 192, Delivery and Pickup of Alcohol. Starting now with the sponsor statement, this bill would allow package store license holders who sell alcohol to include alcohol in curbside pickup and delivery orders. Delivery and curbside pickup service options boomed during the COVID-19 pandemic. This allowed many Alaskan retailers to stay in business and provided a way for consumers to access goods while maintaining distance. At the time, statutes prohibiting alcohol delivery and pickup were suspended.
And just one second, I just want to clarify for the record, I misspoke. This is not sponsored by House Labor and Commerce Committee. This is sponsored by my office. So please continue. Thank you.
At the time during COVID, the statutes prohibiting alcohol delivery and pickup were suspended. By Governor Dunleavy in the April 2020 COVID-19 Disaster Order of Suspension Number 2. These suspensions were renewed in November 2020 but expired on March 23, 2021. During this one-year period, no infractions related to these services were reported. This success shows that Alaska could now administer the suspended laws as Alaska law and allow an avenue for businesses to provide this service to our citizens. Currently, 38 states offer curbside pickup of alcohol, and 35 states offer delivery of alcohol. Nationwide, a study from 2022 with over 2,500 surveyed showed that in age brackets between 21 and 49, 60% of Americans are using alcohol curbside and delivery services, while ages 49 to 69 are using this at an average rate of 30%. And I will provide that data to each office and add it to the bill file tomorrow. This is becoming the nationwide norm in shopping and provides many benefits to customers, such as convenience, accessibility, as well as enhancing a retailer's ability to offer services that customers want and need. In our next hearing, we'll have invited testimony from members of the industry that this would affect to hear their perspective on this potential legislation and their experience in other states. I'll move forward with the sectional analysis and then would be happy to take questions.
Thank you.
The sectional analysis for HB 192. In Section 1, AS Alaska Statute 0409230E amends subsection 4 to add an exception under H and implements a requirement for a package store delivery endorsement under AS 0409470 or consumer delivery license under AS.09.380 for the delivery of alcoholic beverages to a person not present on the licensed premises. Section 2, AS 0409230F, is amended to clearly communicate H cannot be violated within the amended statute. Section 3, AS 0409230, is amended by adding new subsections to allow the holder of a package store license to offer curbside pickup of alcoholic beverages if the alcoholic beverage is sealed or packaged in a closed bottle and can, by the manufacturer, or sealed, tamper-proofed and labeled in a growler by the holder. Furthermore, an agent or employee who is not an independent contractor and has completed an alcohol server education course delivers the alcoholic beverage from the licensed premises to the purchaser at the location described in the next paragraph of this sectional analysis and requires the purchaser to provide identification and acceptable proof of age. House Bill 192 also includes the following subsections to better define the bill. The holder designates a parking place less than 225 feet from the entry to the package store premises for pickup of alcoholic beverages. The transaction is not prohibited under AS 0416030. The holder provides written information regarding the license and curbside pickup on a form prescribed by the director. The holder consents to an inspection of the area designated for curbside pickup, excluding private vehicles, at all reasonable times and in a reasonable time and manner by an officer or employee charged with enforcing the alcoholic beverage control laws and the regulations of the board or by a peace officer acting in an official capacity of a peace officer. Section 4, AS 0409, is amended by adding a new section named Section 0408380, Consumer Delivery License, which allows the holder of a package store license or a person who contracts with or employs individual for the delivery of retail goods to consumers or an agent, employee, or independent contractor of the holder or person to deliver alcoholic beverages from the licensed premise of a package store to an individual who is located off the licensed premises. Furthermore, the holder of a consumer license or the agent, employee, or independent contractor of the holder may deliver an alcoholic beverage only to an individual who meets the following criteria, is 21 years of age or older, provides identification and acceptable proof of age under AS 0421050B, places the order for purchase of the alcoholic beverage, is designated by the purchaser as a delivery recipient, or is located at the delivery address provided by the purchaser. The holder of a consumer delivery license may deliver an alcoholic beverage outside the hours of operation of the package store if the holder receives the order for purchasing for purchase during the hours permitted under AS 0416010, and the individual delivering the alcoholic beverage completes the delivery within a reasonable amount of time after leaving the package store. If the holder of a consumer delivery license does not hold a package store license, the holder of a package store license is not liable for an action of the holder of a consumer delivery license or an agent, employer, independent contractor of the holder of the consumer delivery license relating to an alcoholic beverage delivered from the package store, including delivery to an individual under 21 years of age in violation of AS 0416051 or a drunken person in violation of AS 0416030. An individual may not deliver an alcoholic beverage under this section unless the individual is 21 years of age or older and holds a valid driver's license. The holder of a consumer delivery license or the agent, employee, or independent contractor of the holder may not deliver an alcoholic beverage under this section who is in an area where the sale of alcoholic beverages has been restricted under AS 0411491. The holder of a consumer delivery license commits the offense of failure to comply with the terms of a consumer delivery license if the person sells alcoholic beverages in violation of A in this statute or fails to comply with the requirements of B, C, E, or F of this section. Failure to comply with the terms of a consumer delivery license is a violation. In Section 5, AS0409480C is amended to insert AS0409230H on subsection B within 1 as an additional accordance to subdivide alcoholic beverages in response to a purchase request from a person who is on the licensed premises or purchase order submitted. Section 6, AS0411400I is amended to replace subsection 11 with the following language, consumer delivery license issued under AS0409380. The former subsection 11 is reformatted in section 6 to subsection 12. Section 11, AS0421020A is amended to replace AS0411080-0411220 with AS0409020 to 0409380. Section 8, AS0965315B is amended to replace AS0409020 to 0409370 with AS0409020 to 0409380. This act takes effect on the effective date of Section 13, Chapter 8, SLA 2024.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Definitely broadly supportive of the concept. I did have a question about the maybe chain of responsibility for service on-site versus at someone's home. Am I understanding the bill correctly that the alcohol can be delivered off-site to someone's home, let's say, and then someone is the deliverer of that alcohol is potentially not liable should the person be, say, under 21 years of age or maybe drunk?
Through the chair to Representative Fields. No, the delivery agent is who is liable.
Delivery. Okay.
So that statute, what that is saying is that if they are a third party who is delivering the alcohol from a package store license holder, then they are liable.
Ah, got it. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I had an unrelated question. Sure. I'm curious if the bill sponsor staff have talked to Ledge Legal about the term independent contractor. Obviously, a company could be delivering these things. I guess my concern here is I don't want to unwittingly buy into this concept that if you hire someone through an app, you are default an independent contractor. Some of these app-based employers are trying to evade workers' comp requirements, and I wonder if independent contractor is the right term, or I just want to check with Ledge Legal that we just refer to them as, you know, a company or maybe company, maybe contractor is the right term. I don't want to assume that it's an independent contractor for purposes of labor law. Thank you. Don't know if that's something you've talked about.
We have not, Representative Fields. We can reach out to
thank you.
Ledge Legal.
One other question.
Or Department of Law. As you...
Thank you. Because I think under current law, transportation network companies carrying people are exempted, but the other companies actually are not exempted from their workers' comp responsibilities. I just don't want to encourage an environment where, say, someone delivering alcohol is excluded from workers' comp protections. What are your thoughts on whether this should be available to breweries and distilleries as well as package stores?
Well, Representative Fields, if you wish to propose an amendment at a later date, you can.
I guess I'm inclined to think we make it equitable, but I'm curious if there's a reason they're not in here right now. Open to thoughts.
We're addressing package store licenses in this bill. Like I said, if you wish to make an amendment at a future date, you have that ability.
Thank you.
At a future date, Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the chair. And just to be clear, a package store includes both a Fred Meyer's alcohol section as well as a brown jug type of establishment. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Carey. Yes.
Okay, just to follow up. Through the chair, I also really like this concept. I also would like to see the option for deliveries through breweries and distilleries. But I had one further question, which is, in the bill, there's language about delivery to persons who are must be at least 21 and not drunken. Is there anything? I don't see anything in this legislation related to the third party making that delivery. So does this legislation potentially allow someone who's not 21, since they're not the purchaser of alcohol, to pick up and deliver alcohol?
Representative Carrick, no, that would still be illegal under Alaska statutes. I might point out that when somebody goes and purchases alcohol from a package store, the package store cannot really be liable for what they did then go and do with it, assuming they're, you know, in a good state of mind when it's being sold to. So the current situation is that I suppose somebody could go and purchase alcohol from a package store and then give it to a minor. It would be illegal. It would still be illegal under this. The important point is the package store has a responsibility at point of sale and at transfer to ensure that the person is over 21. Mrs. Hackenmiller, if you have anything to add to that?
Through the chair to Representative Carrick. Great question, and we will have some industry experts in testimony, and they will express or explain how they, in other states, what they do to ensure that the person is over 21 that they are delivering to, and because they are, again, they are liable for that.
Just a follow-up. The person that is driving from point A to point B, though, that question, is there anything currently in statute or with this bill that specifies that that person must be 21? Or do we care, I guess? Is that, you know, that's the question.
So, Representative Carrick, I'd direct your attention to Section 4, line 9 through, well, 12, where it says 21 years of age or older, I suppose.
We can talk later.
Okay. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair to the witness, just curious, having read through the bill thoroughly, is there any limit in this bill to the number of consumer delivery licenses which might be issued?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, not at this time, not in this bill, in statute.
Oh. If I could follow up a different topic?
Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm also looking at Section 4. Looking at subparagraph B and then 3, the question of essentially the holder of a consumer delivery license may deliver to an individual who places the order, is designated as a delivery recipient, or is at the delivery address provided by the purchaser. So my question would be, A, how does the delivery license holder confirm the identity of the purchaser? If it's going to be done over the telephone, I assume, how do they know that the person who made the phone call and ordered the beverage is the person to whom the delivery is being made?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, the details of how that is done can be explained by the expert testimony that we're the industry testimony we're going to have at the next hearing. They have been doing this for a long time and have a lot of checks in place and can explain to you how they do so.
I'll hold those questions until that time. Thank you.
And I did want to correct my statement before. Is Section 4, lines 29 through 30 that control? But I would also ask the representative to re-review Section 4 in its entirety, for possibly for addressing his questions. I think with that, we Oh, sorry, Representative Prox.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have no doubt that this is going on currently, illicitly, I guess it is. But I'm having trouble just in my mind imagining how we're going to change the situation to make it more legitimate. There seems to be a lot of ways to get around this. Do you have any information, other states that have done this, that we could maybe look at their statutes and regulations before the next hearing so we're better prepared for the next hearing to see if they have a practical solution to getting around essentially bootlegging, I guess?
Representative Prox would be happy to provide you with some statutes from other states.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay, with that, seeing no other business before the committee, we will set this bill aside for a future date. That concludes our business today. And we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:45 p.m.